Let's move on to item four, which is discussion and possible action of the report from the technical consultant. Just a reminder, we're just now spinning up and getting our technical consultant on board. One of the things I asked them to jump ahead of a little bit and give us an update on what's expected of them. As a reminder for everybody on the voting members and everybody else online, the state sets the scope of what the consultant does. They provide the funding, they dictate the deliverables for the most part, and we get a little bit of control to optimize that stuff to our region. So with that, I'm going to let Ryan go ahead and kick off there.
All right. Thank you, Alicia. Good morning, everyone. It is a pleasure to be back and an honor to work with y'all again. I think we did a good job working together as a team to put together the 2023 regional flood plan, and I think we're ready to get started on 2024 to 2028 regional flood plan. So again, thanks for bringing us back. We've already got a lot of stuff to talk about, or at least some important stuff to talk about. Today, I just want to kind of introduce to y'all again our technical consultant team. I think you've already seen that in SOQ, but I wanted to introduce everyone again and then talk about some regional news and events that had happened in our basin since the last time we talked, some weather events and some things that happened with Texas Water Development Board, and then give you a brief high-level overview of the 2028 plan, some of the changes that has happened, and just kind of a reminder and a refresher of what's all involved with the planning process. And then most importantly, talking about this amendment process. We have some potential to amend this 2024 state flood plan to incorporate new FMXs. So I want to talk about what we know about that process and kind of discuss some scheduling with that as a segue into y'all's next agenda item. So overview of the technical consultant team. So half, we're priming this. I'm managing. I was kind of the deputy PM last go around, learned a lot with y'all, developed some really strong relationships with y'all. So I'm really looking forward to stepping into this role. Sam Hinojosa was a PM last time, but he's kind of gravitated to higher things at half. So he'll be still around. He'll be advising us and kind of making sure we're on the right track on and stuff like that. But I'll be managing it. Scott Rushing was all our deputy project manager last time. He will be, again, deputy project manager this time. He's up in the Fort Worth area. I'm kind of more in the southern part of the basin near Harris County, Montgomery County. So we're kind of spread out with him. He's on the call today. And then Jenna Bloom is here. She was kind of the assistant project manager last time. She's going to fill that role again this time, but in a more prominent role. She is a great asset to the team. Last time she was working more in the background, but she'll be managing coordination with stakeholders and managing data and all that kind of stuff. And then we have a similar team, sub-consultant team. We got Fries and Nichols to help us really give us more bandwidth as far as staffing availability. We're bringing back Torres and Susan Roth again for their specific niches that they can provide, their specialties. And then a new team member is Holloway. They're really going to help us with public outreach. We've partnered with them in the past on some other projects. They're going to be helping us with public involvement, helping us put together the road shows where we had those public meetings. But they'll also be helping us with outreach to stakeholders and helping us on the bandwidth on that side too, to make sure we're really reaching out to all potential stakeholders within our basin and making sure communication is fluid and effective. So, and as we go through the tasks, I'll introduce individual members of those teams once we get to those tasks that they'll be leading for us. So just kind of wanted to catch everyone up on some news and events that has happened since the last time we've met. Just recently, August 15th, the Texas Water Development Board adopted the 2024 state flood plan. So the state flood plan is basically a conglomeration and consolidation of all the regional flood plans into a single document. So that was approved. That also includes the amendment that we did as well. This document is now going to go to the state legislature, I believe, on September 1st of this year for final adoption by the state legislature. So you can see the celebration event there that on August 15th.
Ryan, let me pause you real quick. Mm-hmm. Sujith, is there something you need to interrupt with at this time?
Yes, Chair. I want to ask Ryan the question on the technical consultant team. how does it differ from the proposal? Has any changes been done or
from the SOQ?
Proposal.
Yeah, from the SOQ, there's been no changes, I don't believe.
Thank you.
Same team member, same. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Sujeet. Go ahead, Ryan.
As far with the release of the 2024 State Flood Plan, the Texas Water Development Board has also developed the website that I think is really informative, so I wanted to put this in front of y'all. You can actually read the State Flood Plan there at the website using the texasstatefloodplan.org. But there's also a really helpful interactive State Flood Plan viewer that I think would be good for all the members to kind of check out and see what's there. You can see it breaks out the state into the different regional floodplains, and you can get some high-level information here. You can see on that right-hand side there, it gives you general information as far as number of buildings, population, people with flood risk, all that kind of information. But then you can dive into your local region. This under flood risk tab, there's this existing and future flood risk. So under task two, we had developed this flood quilt, if y'all recall, where we took all this different flood risk information and developed a quilt. Flood risk, and you can see that product there, and you can zoom in and kind of see what the flood risk is in your area that you're wanting to look into. And then the recommended solutions is what we kind of colloquially call FMXs. You can see a little bit more specificity on those here, so you can see where that's located, where that specific FMX is located, what the data is behind it, the watershed. Basically, all the information that we provided to the Texas Water Development Board is now there publicly available for you to view if you wanted to kind of zoom in and see what the specifics were in a GIS or spatial format rather than in a table. And then there's other information there, too, that you can explore. I'm not going to go through all that, but these were the two key items that I think were really helpful with this floodplain viewer or the Texas State Floodplain website. Also, the Flood Infrastructure Fund, the 2024 to 2025, is moving forward. There's about $375 million worth of funding allocated toward this fund by the state of Texas. They just requested abridged applications. Those were due on April 15th. And only those projects or FMXs, so studies, projects, strategies that were in the state flood plan were eligible to be submitted to this fifth submittal. So it's kind of rolling in the state flood plan into funding availability. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. Are these applications already submitted, or is it 2025, or it says April 15, 2024?
So the abridged applications were due April 15th, and so that's already passed. What they're doing now is evaluating those abridged applications and making sure. Yeah, I'll continue on. That's kind of what I was getting into on the rest of this slide. They're evaluating those abridged applications to make sure they're in agreement with the state flood plan. And so they want to make sure all those boxes are being checked. And then if they still qualify, if they're still in agreement with the state flood plan, then they'll be prioritized. And so they've already went through and prioritized the FMSs, which is the flood management strategies. And that list is made available online. You can see that. Once they go, right now they're currently prioritizing the FMEs and FMPs, and those lists will be published as well. And they'll be prioritized based off of rankings that were provided earlier in the flood planning process. And then the top scoring FMXs will be given, the sponsors will be sent invitations to submit a full financial assistance application once prioritization and once those invitations are sent out, and they'll be able to submit a full application to get funding for that FME or FMP or FMS. So the Flood Infrastructure Fund, which we call the FIF, it's a two-year cycle. So the next cycle will be 2026 to 2027. So that will come up later in discussion during the amendment process. So just kind of tuck that in the back of your brain. Just want to kind of talk about weather in our region. We've had a very wet season here, especially in East Texas. You can see the figure on your left is the annual average precipitation for state of Texas. Obviously, it's wetter on the east side. So around 55 inches on the farthest east side of the state. We've already received that plus some. The figure on the right is the total rainfall up until August 15th of this year. So the East Texas has really gotten a lot of rain, which includes our basin. Just kind of looking at it on a graph, on the lower basin, Houston region really has an exceptionally wet year. You can see the brown line is the average or normal precipitation expected for this region on the southern basin, with the green line being the actual total precipitation. So we're almost hugging the 1900 record for precipitation. So a lot of rain, a lot of storm events happening in the lower basin. Upper basin still also got unusually more rain, but not quite as much. But a wet year for the state of Texas and for our basin. The Navasota River has received a historic flood this year. There was an intense rain event that happened in the watershed on the upper portion of the Navasota River, and that resulted in record flooding downstream. The Navasota River is mostly rural or an agricultural land, not heavily populated, but the flood levels did get high. I think the record at this specific gauge was 30, and so it just slightly broke that record. And the image on the left is the Navasota River at State Highway 6. So you've been out there, it's kind of a sense of perspective, it got pretty high. So that was a notable event. It wasn't just the Navasota River Basin. Actually, there was a storm event that happened across to our neighbors to the east as well, just to kind of give you a little bit more context on how extreme this event was. Lake Conroe received a lot of rainfall. They ended up having to release flow rates up to or maybe close to what it had to release during Hurricane Harvey. So an intense rain event for that watershed as well. Lake Livingston also had record rainfall as well, or historic rainfall. So the image on the left is just downstream of Lake Conroe, where they had to do high releases and it flooded some infrastructure downstream. So it wasn't just a Navasota River event. It was a kind of a regional event of the Waco-Huntsville area. And then we had Hurricane Beryl come through, came kind of up the southern portion of our basin. So the images on the right, you can see we had a lot of wind down the Freeport area. We had about 3 to 6 feet of storm surge, and then some heavy rain, obviously, on the eastern side of the hurricane, Category 1 hurricane, that mostly affected the Houston-Harris County region. They got a substantial amount of rain, but I know some of our communities like Rosenberg and elsewhere in the southern portion received a lot of rainfall, too, that resulted in some local flooding for those communities. The wind is more of an effect on us than the rain in our lower basin. Office of the State, Texas State Climatologists, they release an update to their climate report. So it's called the 2024 update. Nothing super groundbreaking on this. Just something to know is that their estimation is that extreme rainfall is expected to increase by 10% by the year 2036. Obviously, it's an estimate, and this estimate is based off of trends that they're seeing. So some increase in intensity of rainfall, which will translate roughly to an increase of about 50% in the frequency of extreme rain events when you compare it to 2001 to 2020. It's a bigger increase when compared to 1950 and 1999 records. So something we want to consider later during a future flood risk analysis of how we want to incorporate this data and this information from the state climatologists. They're kind of high level pass at how does that affect flooding. They see that affecting urban flooding proportionally. So increase in rainfall is going to result in increase in urban flooding. They don't see as big of an increase in riverine flooding due to mitigation infrastructure such as dams, ponds, stuff like that, that are already being put in place to help mitigate future flooding. So they don't see a huge impact on riverine flooding. And then they obviously anticipate somewhat higher storm surges due to stronger hurricanes in the future. But you can view this report if you want to at Texas2036.org, and you can read the report there on your own. So moving on to what we're doing now, the 2028 Regional Flood Plan. I just wanted to give a high pass overview of what we're doing, what's changed, and what the next steps are. So these are the tasks 1 through 4. So this is the stuff that we'll be working on this coming year. Nothing really has substantially changed on the front end. Planning area description is just kind of giving an overview of the basin on a socioeconomic level, and then also looking at flood infrastructure, what's out there, just kind of a general view of our basin from a flood risk perspective. Then task 2A and 2B is looking at flood risk. That's where our flood quote came from. So that's where we took Fathom data, BLE data, or best available models, and kind of took it all together, prioritized different levels of accuracy of flood risk, and made a flood quilt for the whole basin so that we can get a high-level overview of understanding of flood risk. And that's what's on the state viewer on the website that I showed earlier, is that flood quilt. So that's where that product is coming from, is from this task 2A and 2B. The goal of this is just to go through and look at that data, update it based off the best available information, and send it back. There's also a change I'll talk about in a minute. We're also now incorporating the 10% event. So before it was just the 1% and 0.2%, or otherwise known as 100 year and 500 year. We'll now be incorporating the 10-year event to get an understanding of the more frequent flood risk. And then 3A is the flood management practices. That's where we're looking at flood drainage criteria across the region. How well is it enforced? Floodplain regulations. Where is it enforced? Where is it more heavily enforced? Just kind of giving a whole perspective view of the region as far as management practices. And then there's going to be some recommendations. The region, the group has the opportunity to put in criteria that they would like to see in the region that would be required for approval of an FMX. So if we want to have a certain criteria that you need to have a certain, you know, floodplain practice put in place, well, you need to do this before we'll fund your FMX, or before we'll approve your FMX, I should say. But we'll talk more about that when we get to that point. Flood mitigation needs analysis. That used to be task 4A, got moved up. We're just looking at the whole region and seeing what are the areas that are most vulnerable to flood risk. Where are those areas that don't have flood risk information, and kind of categorizing those areas and mapping that out. And that will help lead the task further on, such in task 5. And then task 3C is the flood management goals. So that's where the group will go through and evaluate what are our goals over the next 10 and 30 years. We can look at our previous goals, see how we've how close we've met those goals that we established last time, and then we have a chance to update those goals this time. And then task 4A, this is a big one. That's why it's highlighted in blue. This is the identification and evaluation of potential FMXs. So FMX, if you recall, is really FMS, FME, and FMPs kind of grouped together. So an FMS is a flood management strategy. These are more your high level. They're not really a project, not really a study. So it's kind of a catch-all for anything in between, such as, you know, potentially flood gauges or buyouts, stuff like that. FMEs are basically studies. These are drainage studies or master drainage plans. So flood management evaluation, you can just kind of think of a study. These are needed often to get a project to meet the criteria needed for an FMP to be classified as a project. So maybe doing benefit cost ratios or doing additional no impact analysis on these projects, just to get it over that threshold to meet the minimum criteria to be an FMP. But they can also be master drainage plans. I just go and try to develop projects, flood mitigation projects. FMP is a flood mitigation project. That's actually a project that's constructible, that has a cost benefit analysis already done, that's met all the criteria. It's close to shovel ready, not quite to that point, but it is more of a capital project or construction project. So those are what FMXs are. So task 4A is just to go through and reach out to stakeholders, see what the needs are, and I go through and identify which ones are potential FMXs that can be later recommended to be included in the state flood plan under task 5. And then task 4B is just preparing a technical memorandum to summarize all this effort before we move on to the next phase, which is on the next slide. And then task 4C is performance of identified FMEs. So if y'all recall, our group went in, we did, I think, maybe four to six studies, basically master drainage plans across the basin, mostly focusing on rural areas that didn't have flood risk information. where we basically just studied their reach and came up with flood mitigation projects for them to implement to reduce flood risk, again, for rural communities that don't have the ability to do their own studies or hire a consultant to do that. We were able to do that for them. And so we'll be doing this task again here, where we'll be going through and identifying FMEs that we can perform as y'all's technical consultant. And then once all that's completed, we'll move into this second phase. This actually requires approval from the Texas Water Development Board to get started. So once we get that approval, we'll get into task 5A, which is taking that list of potentially feasible FMXs and making recommendations on which ones we want to include in the state flood plan and which ones we don't. And if y'all remember last time, it was mostly dependent on whether it had a sponsor or not. So if it had a sponsor and it was potentially feasible, most of the FMXs became recommended within the state flood plan. So again, similar process here. Task 5B is a new task. This is a list of studies that we want the Texas Water Development Board to do on our behalf. So that would be going in, identifying those recommended FMEs or studies, identifying which ones we want to perform as a group, and then asking the Texas Water Development Board, based off of their staffing availability and schedule, and identifying those FMEs that we want them to perform, and then giving them a scope of work and a schedule and all that information, all the supporting information they need to do to perform those studies. And they'll do that. I don't know if they're going to do it in-house or if they'll hire a technical consultant. I don't know the details on that yet, but that is a new task there. And then 6A is just identifying how the regional flood plan will affect flood conditions. So it's mostly, if you implement all these FMXs that we recommend, you'll reduce flood risk by this much, kind of an overview of like what are the positive impacts there, and also making sure that any of the projects we recommend do not have a negative impact on our neighbors. 6B is making sure that we're benefiting water supply, or at least not hurting our water supply as a result of these projects. Task 7 is just looking at flood response information activities across the region, just seeing what's out there. This does not include doing any type of development of a flood response system or anything like that. It's just evaluating what's out there currently. Task 8 is admin, regulatory, and legislative recommendations. Pretty self-explanatory. It's just what us as a group would recommend to the state legislature as far, or even to other entities, of what we would recommend as far as legislation or regulatory recommendations for our region. And then task 9 is flood infrastructure financing analysis. So that's looking at the recommended FMXs and making recommendations on how, and coordinating with the sponsors on how those would potentially get funded, and kind of creating a financial roadmap for getting those projects implemented. And then task 10 is a big one. It's public participation. It's kind of a catch-all too. It's also our regulatory or invoicing, progress reports, all that kind of stuff. But it's also public outreach, reaching out to stakeholders, us attending these meetings, holding our roadshow, public meetings, all captured under this task 10. And finally, task 11 is a new task. This is just an evaluation of what's changed from the previous flood plan and to this flood plan. So as you recall, the first state flood plan was really just learning as we go and kind of trailblazing. Hopefully we've learned a lot. We've learned a ton from that process. I think everyone has, including the Texas Water Development Board. We're going to take what we've learned and be able to, as we go through each task, we'll be able to pivot and learn from, you know, we now know what's going to happen in the end. So we're going to make recommendations to potential changes from what we did last time. Some things we can keep the same. And we'll be able to focus on updating the plan. So we'll be looking at past data and seeing what new data is available, looking at past FMXs and seeing what new is available. And being able to, we'll also need to come up with a system of purging out old information, old FMXs, all that kind of stuff, to make sure we don't have needs that came about from 30 years ago. So we'll also be incorporating that too as we go along, of how to clean up and upgrade from the previous flood plan. So this is the kind of a high level schedule. So you can see here, September 2024 is when we were tasked to get started. So we're a few days early. So congratulations on that. So we'll get started with phase one, phase two, and phase three. Really, the main deadline for all these phases is September of 2025, when we have to do the technical memorandum that's due to the Texas Water Development Board that summarizes all of our work under those tasks. Once we get approval of that, we'll move and get approval from the Texas Water Development Board to go into Task 5. We'll start that in September or October of 2025. By January 26th of 2026, we need to have a list of FMEs that we want the Development Board to do or to perform. So we'll need that list of them, in January 2026. In the meantime, we'll be moving forward phase 4, phase 5, which is basically the rest of the floodplan. And that needs to be submitted. The draft regional floodplan needs to be submitted to the group, to the board, sorry, by February 2027, with final adoption in January 2028. And then our contract will expire in July of 2028. So any questions? Oh, sorry. One other thing. There's some just major task scope changes that I wanted to list. So task one, I know we had some questions about what's was a low water crossing. Now we've got some firmer definition of what a low water crossing is, and it's going to be analyzed separately from other flood infrastructure. So it's kind of put into its own category. Task 2A and 2B, we are now incorporating, like I said before, the 10% annual chance event. And so that's the 10-year event in our flood quilt. Again, that gives us a better understanding of the less extreme but more frequent flooding events that happen in our region. So we'll be needing to incorporate that. We will have more information on how to handle levees and dams in areas protected by those and how to classify their flood risk in the flood quilt. And then we will be able to consider future development conditions, but that's up to y'all's discretion. So if we want to have projects that mitigate future conditions, like future development, those can be considered now. Before, that was not on the table. So that's a new feature. Again, up to y'all's discretion if y'all want to do that or not. And then task 4, FMPs and FMSs that prevent future flood risk can be evaluated. I take that to mean before we did a future conditions analysis where we looked at growth in a region, population growth, impervious cover growth due to development, and that resulted in flood risk, higher flood risk due to increased runoff. This is a little bit more than that, is my understanding. This is looking at so you had this higher flood risk in future conditions, but you're looking at existing development, but this will incorporate future development. So what is the flood risk of a future growth of future urban areas or future developments within that flood risk area? So a little bit of expansion on that on task 4. I think that is all for the 2028 scope. Any questions on the task or schedule?
Yeah, just a reminder, you know, this was all new to everybody last time, and we went through in a very rapid pace. So this is sort of the first full cycle, but that being said, it's the end of 2024, and we have to turn it in. We have no time again to get through this. You know, there's a lot of people out there doing a lot of work, so hopefully, as Ryan mentioned, we'll be able to just incorporate some of this other modeling and folks that are doing to catch up to us. One quick example on that task 4 that some of y'all may not think about is when people start developing downstream of a dam, that can change the hazard classification of the dam and can change how that dam has to be built and the level of protection, for example. And so being able to anticipate that means that potentially a dam owner could get some grant funding to harden that dam or bring that dam to standard before the people are actually in place, right? So I'm thankful that the board is thinking through this and opening it up. Like, why do we have to wait? Do we have problems? We don't all need to get to the point of Houston and then send the money. Like those of us that are trying to do the right thing and get out in front, I think there's a real opportunity and definitely a message we want to communicate out to some of our folks that are doing, you know, most communities now are doing land planning on a grand scale. And so we can take some of that on. Yeah. One thing, Ryan, I want to make sure that y'all take on pretty early is, hopefully there's some dollars in there with our communication, is a reset of our website, right? We kind of just need to refresh the whole thing, kind of slide the existing plan stuff into an appropriate archive space and let people know where we are in the new process and what's going forward. It can be a little overwhelming if you land on it and trying to figure out where to go. While that plan is still active, obviously, and that's what controls most of what people are going to be looking to us for, is what are we doing right now and where do they jump into the process? So if y'all can work offline with Pam's team appropriately to kind of look into that, I'd appreciate that.
Holloway and our team will be helping lead that effort. And there are a couple of things that just need to be archived, like you said, and reset for this. So we'll definitely get started on that early so that we can have that ready whenever we reach out to stakeholders. So
good deal. All right. Is there any other voting members that have questions at this time before we get into the flood amendment process, which may be a long conversation? Is there anybody have questions about what the scope is going forward? Any of the stuff that Ryan just highlighted? I've got two in the room. Either one of you gentlemen? No. Okay, any of our voting members online, a question at this time? It looks like Sujeet, I saw a real hand, yep. Not a virtual. Yep. Go ahead.
Chair, I want to ask Ryan a question on Task 3A, which is the flood management practices. Has the Water Development Board given a best practices format or something for the flood management practices?
I haven't seen anything that they've provided, no. Jenna or Sam, have y'all seen anything? No, I don't think so, Sujeet.
So would it be possible to ask them if they're willing to look into that one? Because, and then we can modify and adapt to what our needs are. Because, you know, you can have a global framework and from there you can hone on specific to our region issues right there.
I can ask the question. I know the intent of the development board is to do a bottom up. So it's letting us kind of dictate what's best for our region. So I think that's what they're kind of coming at from that angle is y'all tell us or tell the state legislature what's important to y'all as far as floodplain practices. So, but I can ask. I can ask that question for sure.
Seems like there was a recommendation in the plan that just got approved also that there be sort of a statewide baseline. And it may have been more regulation based of like what's your minimum floodplain ordinance. But it seems like that was something that bubbled up from all the regions last time. And again, the Water Development Board is not going to dictate it, but it seemed like that's something that kind of floated that, hey, maybe you guys set sort of a standard that we could benchmark off of. And so, Sujeet, if they don't, then we could probably look to some other resources, COGS or somebody else that's got a good baseline that we can use as a starting point for our region and then cut and paste. You know, I think one of the things we want to probably consider that's unique about us going forward is we're one of the few regions that broke down into groups, right? Because what's happening for us in our very, like our coastal areas is very different than the flooding that's happening in our hill country. So if we go to sort of picking something, it may be similar again, where we have to go through this sort of, yeah. I don't remember what we called it, areas or section previously.
Regions or something like that, subregions or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll reach out to them.
Chair, the other thing is I echo your concerns about the web. Updating the information. I'm pretty sure we have our flood report right there, but also can we hook back on our website about this Texas state, you know, the website and also the final report, what was submitted. So people want to view that, they can. And also we have all the emails of the floodplain administrators or something. Can we start sending information out so that we don't get surprised like last minute on the amendments and all the stuff? That's just a comment.
You want us to send communication to the floodplain administrator or the stakeholders, I guess, just on the update of where we're at?
Well, I think, you know, the state adoption of the plan right there and also the website, which shows them the whole thing. But that way, no one gets blindsided that they got to be ahead of the curve rather than we have to sit back and in the last minute, you all have to go back and do some of the studies, which given the deadlines right there.
I think he's just saying, you know, the clearer that we can make the website and then continue to be able to direct people there so that if they don't hit a meeting, they'll be able to quickly figure out. And then obviously, and you'll see if you go back to your little timeline, Ryan, where you showed the tasks, the little Gantt bar at the bottom, which most people may not be able to see, is sort of the outreach, right? So it's supposed to be this long, continuous kind of process. So I think as we get ready for each of our kickoff phases, then we can do a push. And we have a pretty big mail queue already of people who've subscribed, and we'll continue to kind of do those updates. And so I think with that, we'll want to kind of refresh at each of those key milestones as we're getting close on the website. As we hit that tech memo, then we'll refresh to something new. And I think everybody got the point, and we'll talk about that in this next topic. It's probably a good transition. Is there any other than Sujeet, questions on that existing thing before we move on to item 5? Because he's setting us up for kind of a perfect transition.